Here we are. This is Real World Radio on air.
New report makes 10 proposals for how to pay for the COVID-19 pandemic and a just transition. Interview with Ben Tippett, researcher from TNI and author of the report. The world is currently facing a series of existential and interlocking crises, stated Ben Tippett, educator, activist, and researcher at the Transnational Institute. He's the author of the recently published report, Paying for the Pandemic and a Just Transition. So how are we going to pay for this crisis? Or more importantly, who is really going to pay? The report answers this question by bringing together 10 progressive proposals that could pay for the cost of the pandemic and finance a just transition to a better world.
Well, you know, the world is currently facing a series of existential and interlocking crises. We saw that particularly over the summer, the summer months in the global north this year, so August, September time, where on the one hand, in California, you know, the richest state and the most powerful country in the world was experiencing both the pandemic and also the most extreme forest fires in its history. You know, so basically people couldn't go outside or go inside because both risked affecting their lungs or spreading the fire or spreading the disease. While on the other side of the world, we also had Bangladesh, you know, one of the poorest countries in the world, which was underwater and also trying to fight the pandemic at the same time. And it was underwater because of it was facing some of the worst floods that it's experienced in its history. And I think, you know, these two events really show that these are global crises. No matter where you are in the world, you're going to be affected by them. But as we know from the long history of inequality that exists in the world, is that people won't suffer these crises equally. You know, some are going to bear the brunt, or some are already bearing the brunt of them much more than others. And it's predominantly those in the global south who are the ones that are at the forefront of this crisis. You know, that's, I think, the state of the world as it exists now. The other thing is obviously the pandemic. And the pandemic has unleashed extraordinary, unprecedented levels of state spending in particularly the global north, and also debt crises and financing problems in the global south. Now, what we're seeing with the pandemic, particularly now, is, you know, the hope that maybe this might end with the rise of successful vaccine tests across the world. And I think as we kind of shift from the crisis of how do we fight the pandemic to the kind of next stage of the disease, is people are going to basically be asking, you know, how are we going to pay for this? How are we going to pay for this unprecedented level of state spending? And then when you add in the multiple crises that we face on top of that, you know, who is really going to pay for this? And I think as progressives, we really need an answer and make sure that those who, you know, make sure that those who have the broadest shoulders, make sure that the richest and most powerful people in society, who are often the most responsible for generating these crises in the first place, are the ones at the bill, and making sure that the poorest people in society, unlike the austerity of the past, are not the ones who are made to suffer. So the aim of the publication is to come up with 10 progressive proposals in which we basically outline how much money could be raised from these progressive proposals. And what we find, if in terms of our headline figure, is that over the next 10 years, we could raise roughly around $9.5 trillion annually across the globe from these 10 progressive proposals. And I'll go maybe into a little bit more depth in what some of the proposals are in a sec, but these are things like wealth taxes, shutting down tax havens, putting in a windfall excess profit tax on the companies and rich individuals that benefited from the pandemic. So what we find is that we can raise $9.5 trillion annually a year, which is a huge amount, you know, just over 10% of global GDP. Is that enough to pay for the crises that we face? Is it enough to pay for the state spending that has been taken during COVID? We find that it is. So when we add up all of the costs of the pandemic, what we need to fight climate change, what we need to pay for slavery reparations, and what we need to pay for forms of climate reparations for countries like Bangladesh or other countries that are facing the loss and damages of climate change, and also the costs of the Sustainable Development Goals, what we find is that this is actually a lower amount than what we could raise with the $9.5 trillion from the 10 proposals. In the report, I really collate pre-existing proposals, as you say, from social movements, from academics, from think tanks, from some of the big international organizations. So really the aim of the report isn't to really even be putting through new ideas. It's to say, you know, people have already thought of these ideas in the past. The question is, are they enough to pay for the crises that we face? And we find that they are. And I think, you know, in terms of your question, you know, why these proposals? Why taxing capital? Why shutting down tax havens? Maybe let me take you through a couple just to show some of the justifications for each proposal. You know, one of the big ones, the first proposal and one of the proposal that we estimate will raise the most amount of money is implementing some form of global wealth tax, or at least a tax, national wealth taxes that are coordinated globally. And this proposal comes from Thomas Piketty's latest book. And the justification really for a progressive wealth tax is the fact that we live in a world, in our society, pretty much it's a secular fact, really, across most societies in the world, the wealth inequality is increasing. And also wealth inequality is extreme. So if you take global wealth inequality, the top 1% own as much wealth as around the bottom 88% of the population. So we have an extreme concentration of wealth in the hands of the richest people in society. And this is at a point where the pandemic is threatening to push half a billion people into poverty. There's also increasing support for wealth taxes, where we see polling being done across the world. In the country that I'm from, in the UK, the British public apparently want wealth taxes above any other form of tax rises in order to pay for the cost of the pandemic. And so this is a kind of classic example where we could fight inequality and also raise a serious amount of money to tackle the other crises that we face at the same time. And what is the justification? Well, the global top 1% do not need the amount of wealth that they currently have. You know, this is a misallocation of the world's resources. I think the best summarization of this is the line, you know, every billionaire is a policy failure. You know, billionaires shouldn't exist in a world in which half a billion people are being pushed into poverty from the pandemic. So, that, you know, this is, I think, one of our big proposals. Maybe to take a slightly different perspective on a different proposal that isn't so much around inequality and corporate taxation or individual taxation, is the idea of redirecting military spending. Because I think this is something maybe that is sometimes left off the table a little bit in when we think about progressive economics. So currently the globe spends around $1.9 trillion a year on global military spending. And I think what the pandemic has shown is that really, you know, we need a broader understanding of human security. You know, these diseases cannot be tamed at the barrel of a gun. Neither can climate change be dealt with through a rise in military expenditure. While at the same time, we know that a lot of this military expenditure, particularly that that's been conducted by the US military, is leading towards a crisis and displacement of people across the world. So, for example, there was a recent report that showed since the beginning of the war on terror, the US military has contributed to displacing roughly around 37 million people in the Middle East, which is the equivalent of the population of Canada. So what we're arguing for is basically you could reclaim 10% of global military expenditure and put it into fighting these other crises. If you think that is utopian, then let me say that at least some countries are on the path to doing this. South Korea and Thailand have said that they will trim next year's defense budget or military budget by around 8% next year, with the money going instead to a stimulus package and a disaster relief fund. You know, if progressives in the US, for example, try to push for this, which, you know, Bernie Sanders, for example, has signed up to the idea that we should reclaim 10% of military global expenditure, there are people within the Democrat Party pushing for this, because the US is such a massive military spending country that I think, you know, it could have a real knock-on effect. So they're kind of two policies. I also look at the debt crisis in the global south, and there's a lot of interesting research going on about how we might be able to cancel the debts, the unsustainable debts of countries in the global south. You know, at the beginning of the pandemic, we saw that 64 countries currently pay more on debt servicing than on healthcare, which is just, you know, a shocking indictment of the current international economic order. And I think, you know, the G20 this month has just come up with a common framework to deal with this. One of the main problems, and I guess particularly the South American experience really knows about this, is the fact that this common framework set out by the G20 doesn't include private creditors. And we know that private creditors have been the ones holding governments to ransom, if you look at the history of Argentina and what's happened there. And even, you know, everyone knows that the global system is not working at the moment. And I think I'll finish with this line from the president of the World Bank. You know, the World Bank, one of the most conservative international institutions, he calls the current system, debt system, the modern equivalent of debtor's prison. So this, you know, there is desperate need for reform. And in the report, I set out some of the ways in which this could be done.
I would like to ask you one last question, Ben, which is, how do these measures would help at the same time of facing the pandemic to pay for a just transition?
For sure, yeah. I think this is a really interesting question because particularly in a country like the UK, there's a big debate at the moment about how do we pay for the pandemic? And what's interesting is that what you're seeing is even organizations like the IMF, you know, the chief architect of austerity, is now making noises that if you're a rich country, you don't really have to pay back the debt. You know, they're basically saying because interest rates are so low, you can afford to accumulate high debt really without any negative consequences. And in fact, you know, we should be doing this because we could put the money into investment and that will grow the economy in the future. You know, this is the framework in which even the IMF is saying this. And I think it's really important to be like, that's a big win for anti-austerity protesters that has been won over the last 10 years. But I personally don't think just saying that countries in the global north should go into more debt is enough to deal with the scale of the global crises that we face. You know, on the one hand, it doesn't deal with how the crises are predominantly being felt in the global south. And so we need global mechanisms for raising money that at the same time tackle the structural inequality that exists between the global north and the global south. So again, maybe to repeat a couple of the examples of this. I mean, one is certainly the idea of reforming the monetary and debt system. So I talked a little bit about debt. Another idea that's been floated is the idea of special drawing rights. So this is this is effectively the IMF's own international currency. The idea is that if you issue special drawing rights, countries that are fiscally or financially constrained in the global south can use that new money to swap it for dollars or for pounds that it can then use to pay its external debt. So it's a little bit like, I think the best way to think of it is a bit like a gift voucher. You know, when you get a gift voucher, you can use that gift voucher to buy things and that frees up money that you otherwise would have had to spend on that stuff to pay for your healthcare and this kind of stuff. And it's interesting is that the director of the IMF has claimed that special drawing rights aren't off the table. One of the big things, though, is that the US is currently vetoing any change to the international monetary system because they think it would undermine the prevalence of the dollar and the Fed's role of the international lender of last resort. So, you know, I think with the proposals, what I'm trying to do is both raise money and tackle the systemic problems that exist at the same time. You know, with the wealth taxes, we can raise money while also tackling inequality. With the special drawing rights, we can build a fairer international monetary system while freeing up resources for the global south. For the debt jubilee, we can cancel some of the crippling amounts of debt that exist in the world. You know, we're reaching the highest levels of private and public debt levels in history. And I think the aim of this, you know, is we can raise money while also fighting the very crises that exist in the world. And I think this is maybe to finish on the last point, which is, you know, the crisis has very much exposed the fact that if you have enough political will, you know, the pandemic, sorry, has exposed the fact that if you have enough political will, there's so much that we can achieve. You know, we've managed to produce these vaccines in a matter of months. Think about if the same level of energy and political will was shown towards fighting climate change, was shown towards fighting ending extreme poverty. And, you know, I hope that we can't put that kind of we can't put it back in the box in a way, the fact that actually these are political problems that we choose not to do anything about, and we could do something about them if we show the same political will that we did in terms of fighting the pandemic. And I hope, you know, that's an inspiring thing to end on. They're not going to you know, the political elites aren't going to do this themselves. We need an international movement that will force people to do that. And I think that's why news outlet and having these conversations between London and Uruguay, or, you know, across the world, I think is really important. So thanks very much for inviting me on today to discuss this.
This is Real World Radio on air.